compose our mind, pay respect, then we start. Okay, we are facing this typical Mahayana temple Buddha images. At the center is Amitabha Buddha. And beside the two, the smaller one, they are the disciple of Amitabha. On my right, this one is Manjushri, wisdom. Then on my left, the one sitting on the elephant is Pusien, Pusa. So Wen Su, Pusien, Manjushri, and I forgot the Pali name of Wen Su, Pusien, sorry. You can find out yourself. So this one is Earth Store Bodhisattva, Tizang Wang Pusa, the small one here. Then the one with the Pagoda, I think that one is Medicine Buddha. This one with the hand, a lot of hand one is Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Qian So Qian Yan. Then at the back, you see the Sifang Sansun, the Western Paradise Amitabha Buddha, Manjushri and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Then you got the Tibetan. That two is the Tibetan. Then there is one. This one is also a very unique cosmogram. They have all the various Mahayana Buddhas and Kuan Yin and all those things. And the Dharma protector too. So there are a lot of beautiful images too. Especially that side, a lot of Kuan Yin and Maitreya Buddha. Then these two are the abbot, the past abbot. The founder, this one, he's already passed away a long time. I don't know if I ever met him, but the disciple, the other abbot that passed away a few years back, I know him. He's very good. Thank you. He was the one who actually, a few retreats I came, he has a lot of affinity with me. I don't know why. He liked me. And he can feel me. And I can feel him. So he was a very good monk. He even invited me and the rest up there to see the relics of his teacher that time, 20 odd years ago. So they are the people responsible for this place. The rest, I don't know. Maybe later on you will know. Okay, now we compose our mind, we pay respect, mindfully to Amitabha, and to Sakyamuni, then to Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the great beings. Okay, we do it now. Now we will have a simple opening puja following the Theravada tradition. We just chant the salutation to the Buddha, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasam Buddhasa, three times. Then we take refuge, we renew our five precepts, then we rejoice. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasam Buddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.ปาณาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิอทินาทานาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจฉาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปมาทัฏฐานาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุPay respect mindfully to the Buddha and all the other great beings. Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Excuse me. Actually, that day when we came for the pre-trip, this was the cushion shown to us. You're supposed to sit on this, and we were told there were quite a number. I don't know whether they have how many. Yun Chan managed to get one. What about the rest? Oh, I got two on it, three on it.Oh, okay. Never mind. Never mind. It's okay for today. You make do with what you want. Anybody who want this one can come and take. Don't worry. It's very nice. I said before. So if you feel more comfortable with this, you can go and get one. But do it mindfully. Okay. We officiallystart our retreat at this Triple Gem Center, Mahayana Temple, San Bao Si. So I got a lot of joy when I arrived because everything is very good. We came in time according to our target, 12:30 to 1, we're supposed to arrive. We arrived at about 12:40 or 45. Then we met a little bit of trouble with the bus driver, but he is very kind. We told him the wrong thing, so we apologized to him because we thought bus can come up and go down. We saw bus came up before, but we never knew this one is a special size one, 44-seater. So this one cannot U-turn. This one must reverse down the short stretch, then only turn down there.So luckily, I went up there with Joyce. Then we talked to him. I said, sorry about what happened, but don't worry. We will become your supporter. We try to look from the back and the front. Then we should thank Vincent. Vincent and me tried to help him. Then Sui An came along. So he was able to do it, the reverse down. Only one time he tried. He never got problem. Then when he was able to go out, he was so happy, he honored with a very long horn. So after I settled with him, then only I came out to see you all with the Supu. So far, so good. The weather is very conducive, like all the other trips. The weather when you arrive, it is so cooling, cloudy, but no rain. So this is going to be good. Then tonight you will have very good sleep because at night, if the daytime is like that, at night will be very cooling. Anyway, this is a very good place. How many of you can feel the stillness of this place? Anybody? You don't feel anything. There are some. Because this place is very different. The stillness energy is very strong. Even 20 or 30 years ago, when I first come for retreat, every time I come, it has great significance. A lot of things happen to me. I did a lot of Dhamma contemplation here, and I did a lot of sitting here too. Walking, reflection, contemplation. Then a lot of understanding unfold. That's why I like this place, and I always remember what happened here. It has been a long time since then. I just came up for the pre-trip survey after 20 over years. So this is my second time up here after the pre-trip survey. So do make use of these 3 or 4 days to develop whatever mindfulness training leading to the heedfulness, so that you can benefit tremendously from the retreat. Then, if you got any question or what, you write it down on a piece of paper. Those who don't have pen, you can see Stephanie, she is the one. She will give you the paper and the pen. Then we should thank Sister Lee who donated this pen and what they call cut out the paper for us. Then just now the fruits that you all eat came from the compliment of Mr. and Mrs. Kang. They brought it here. We rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's why one of the Dhamma brothers told me, this is important, not from Cameron. I say, Mrs. Kang brought it here. So this is a beautiful one. The other thing that you need to understand is this place is very big, very conducive. The nature is very beautiful. I hope I got time. I will take you around so that you will be able to make use of the place to do your meditation and contemplation. Let's take out the program sheet. So this program sheet, like I said, we start at 7:30, which was good. We thank you for your kind understanding and cooperation. Then you reach my house early. Then we leave before 8:10. That's why we arrive at Sanbaosi, supposed to be 12:30 to 1. So we were on the dot, 12:40. The only thing that we didn't really calculate correctly is I allow you only half an hour to take your lunch, but to set the thing already take more than half an hour. So by the time we finish and start our lunch, it was already 1:30. But it's okay, because on the first day we are not used to the procedure here, so we learn. Then I realize now lunch, including the washing and cleaning up, we may need actually 1 hour. But we try to coordinate better so that what we can do is those who finish early, go and wash your plate first. Don't wait till last minute, everybody start walking, then all walk together. We have to stagger it out a little bit. So now we know there are some basin and there are some what they call this the plastic round pail where you can actually use to wash too. So since these things are available, we use it as a condition to cultivate mindfulness, that is, you can watch mindfully too, but don't do that tight or slow one. Otherwise, you won't finish watching. You can do it fast, no problem. Like your normal watching. Actually, those who are skillful, they do it very fast. That's not, but not the one that simply wash or not clean or no. It's still clean, but it's fast. Because when you are mindful, you do it very gracefully but fast. So mindfulness is very simple. As long as you do it naturally, with the silent mind and aware, that is mindfulness. Then maybe a sample to eat, like today was quite good, but can be better. Because first day, you just arrive, you have not settled in, mindfulness is not strong. So to be expected. Then you turn to next page of the program. We supposed to start at 2:15. Opening puja followed by briefing and meditation instruction. I only got 45 minutes. So it looks like this one I had to sacrifice a bit. But luckily, I already briefed you all quite a bit on the bus. So I will go through it quickly, so that I got time to take you around, so that we can still benefit from the 3:30 to 4:30 meditation. Because during this 3:30 to 4:30 is supposed to be formal meditation. We are sitting and walking or lying down, etc., plus daily mindfulness training. We are bowing, Dhamma contemplation, reflection and inquiry within the vicinity of the temple area while in walking, standing, sitting and lying down posture. So this one, what I would suggest you do is whatever that is appropriate for you. If you are used to sitting, you sit. Then you can alternate with walking, okay? But for those who have developed the ability to develop mindfulness through the bowing, you can bow. Bowing is very simple, I teach you. Bowing, you only need to silence your mind, body and mind as one. If you want to develop the faith, you can chant. Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha. If you have affinity and faith with Kuan Yin, Namo Kunsing Pusa also can. So your bowing is up to you. You can do the 5-point prostration. Understand? As you bow, you recite Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Fo also can. That one is for those who have what they call affinity with the Mandarin way of respect for Sakyamuni Buddha. The meaning is Namo is homage to the Bensi is original teacher. Sijia Moni Fo is Sakyamuni Buddha. So it's up to you. Then Namo Sakyamuni Buddha also can. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Fo also can. Namo Kunsing Pusa also can. Okay? As you bow, you mindfully go down, means body and mind as one. Then you come out. You just do. Don't worry about the wisdom. When you are mindful, you are no one. The body and mind as one. Your whole awareness is with the body. That is kaya anupassana. A lot of people don't understand. Then when you do walking meditation, also the same. I will show it to you. The key thing is walk in a very natural way. Remember, be natural. Relax and aware within, at ease. Just like the what they call the Fraser's Hill instruction that was given on how to develop this. Don't try to be mindful. Trying to be mindful is the thought. The thought trying to be mindful. And that one is not natural, understand? Then you start to note here, note there. You will have problem because the noting is a verbalization. It's a thought converted word. Understand? So again, you can only do one thing at a time. How can you verbalize and yet want to be in sati? The moment you arise a thought, or you arise of what they call conscious word, a concept, your mind is already preoccupied with that. It cannot be aware anymore. So mindfulness is the moment you are silent without thought, without activity of mind, without any perception or feeling or thinking, you are already mindful. Understand? So mindfulness is very simple when you understand. But human beings' problem is they cannot understand what mindfulness is. So they think it's something you must practice and learn and do. The problem is they are so heedless throughout the day. They think a lot. And the reason why they think a lot is because throughout the day when they live their life, they are hardly mindful, they are heedless. The five mental hindrances are very strong. And this mental hindrance, you need to understand them. How many of you still don't know what these five mental hindrances are? Anybody? Everybody know that. What about Monica's sister? Do you understand? Oh, you understand. Very good. So it saved me time. Okay. I will try to write down on the board when you all do meditation. Now I just speak. You see, throughout the day when you live your life, as a human being, like I explained this morning, you have a physical body with all your five senses. Through your senses, you can become conscious of things. You can become conscious of what you see because you have the eye as an organ. You can be conscious of what you hear, conscious of what you smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. So if you don't have mindfulness, awareness and wisdom, the moment you become conscious of what you see or what you hear or what you think, what happens? This is meditation. You find out yourself. But during your daily life, you are so busy thinking, planning and worrying about your life, you got no time to be aware. So that's why throughout the day, you react to what you see, get angry or get interested, develop the desire or craving for the sense experience. And when you hear something you don't like, you become unhappy. Then sometimes you develop this emotional negativity. Sometimes you become fearful. So this is what the Buddha called sensual desire, if you like it, and sense aversion means ill will. You dislike what you hear, what you see, and what you perceive. So sensual desire and ill will are the first two most powerful hindrances of mind, and throughout the day you keep on arising them. That's why they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. That's why you got no peace, no calm. That's why you are throughout the day very reactive, emotional. Then when there is fear, you become restless and you tend to worry about things. As a human being, you got so many things to worry about. You got your health to worry about, your career to worry about, your relationship to worry about, your finance, your business, your in-laws, your children, their health, their well-being. And there are so many things that can make you full of concern and worry. So these are the things that trigger off a mind that is restless. Fear, worry, anxiety create restlessness of mind. You cannot be peaceful. You cannot be yourself. You got something hanging in your head. That's why they call it problem. When you don't have wisdom, you cannot understand or don't know how to solve it, don't know how to attend to it, you call it a problem because you perceive it negativity, you perceive it fear, worry, anxiety. The last one is doubt. Doubt means you don't know what is going on. You just doubt, very doubtful, not sure how to do, how to meditate and all those things. Then sleepiness. When you don't have the faith, the zeal, the spiritual zeal, you cannot handle. Then when you are maybe subject to certain condition, like when you are meditating, you don't understand the importance of meditation, why you meditate, you become sleepy. Lethargic mind, sloth and torpor set in. Then you become sleepy, you doze off. So these are the hindrances that will come and haunt you. So as a human being, because throughout the day you got so much of this, so how can you be peaceful? That's why they come to meditation. They think they must train this mind to be peaceful. Understand? It's not like that. You only need to be silent. But you cannot be silent because throughout the day, you have been doing all this heedless thinking. The hindrances are so strong until it becomes a habitual tendency. As a habitual tendency means when you see something you don't like, you react. When you hear something you don't like, you react. And all these hindrances keep on arising. So how can you reverse all this? That's why meditation is to develop the understanding that the moment I'm silent, I'm already aware. I don't have to learn to be aware. I don't have to train myself to be aware. I only have to decondition my heedless thinking. So the Buddha's way is very simple. You see, anchor your mind to your kaya. That's why people come out with method and technique to meditate. The breathing is also part of your kaya. Rising and falling also part of your kaya. Walking, aware of your footstep, is also part of your kaya. Daily mindfulness is also part of the kaya. But they don't know that these are only skillful means to anchor your mind to your kaya. Means what? Your mind and the bodily movement and action as one without thought. That is mindfulness. Means you slow down the thinking. You anchor this heedless thinking mind to your kaya. When you are with that kaya, aware, you cannot think. That's why they go and focus and concentrate. And then they get it wrong. You are not supposed to focus and concentrate. You are supposed to be mindful, like the in and out breath. Mindful of the in and out breath. Mindful means what? The mind and the breath as one. That's why when you understand, then you know what to do. The Buddha talked about sati. So walking meditation is very simple. You just walk naturally. Understand? Naturally, just walk. Fast or slow is up to you. When you walk naturally, in a very relaxed manner, there is no pressure, no tension. Then you are here to meditate, going to a retreat. Your mind is at peace. Understand? The only thing that can happen is because you think a lot, you have been so heedless for so long, thought will come. Never mind. When thought comes, you just continue to maintain silent, aware. Aware means what? You just like attentive of the movement. Anasana. Just allow the mind to be with the movement. You just walk. After a while, suddenly, you will realize no more thought. The body and mind as one. Like you go for exercise. After you exercise very long, then you realize, suddenly, like you do yoga, or play badminton, or tai chi, all of a sudden, no thought. The whole movement becomes so smooth. And that is mindfulness. That is sati. So walking is the same. Don't go and note anything. Don't go and think of anything. Just walk. When the body and mind is one, your awareness will know. And when your awareness know that sati is different, that is the real sati. It is aware of everything that is going on. And because it is aware of everything that is going on, all of the activity, all the movement and action, the whole bodily, you will know. Then you will see them very clearly through the direct seeing without thought. Then the Dhamma will arise by itself. The characteristic of nature will arise by itself. Because the phenomena will tell you the story. You don't go and look for anything. It's when you are silent that the awakening can arise. The Dhamma which is beyond thought, beyond time. cannot write. So like you walk, I show you how to walk. You can do it fast or slow, it's up to you. You just walk normally. Then after that, the slowing down will happen by itself, because when you are mindful, there is a pace you will come to know that best suit you. And you like to walk that way, where that is a very relaxed, natural way of walking. And you are very mindful. Yeah. Then be attentive of everything that arises when you are mindful. Like the blinking of your eye, your turning, stretching, bending, or whatever. All of your action and movement within the present moment means don't think, don't try to know, just walk. Be aware. Aware means body and mind as one. Okay? I just show you a very simple one. Maybe let me the wireless on. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay. You see, when you walk, let's say you pace yourself, because here the space is very big. You can just relax, then you just walk. Then when you reach the end, what you can do is you just step, turn, understand? Then you walk again. Initially, it's like very clumsy, understand? You are not really like very graceful yet. But it's okay. You just continue to walk. As long as you silence your mind. After a while, you will settle in. Then all this movement, everything, no need to verbalize. Just walk, understand? You must maintain silence and awareness. Then after a while, everything will synchronize in. Then your mindfulness is different. Initially, you don't know it. But after a while, when you go back to your cushion, you realize everything you do, you become more mindful. Even from standing, how you go down, you realize there is awareness already. Then how you kneel, how you cross your leg, how you sit, how your movement, even your blinking of the eye, you will come to be aware. And this is what mindfulness is all about. So when you are mindful, you are very attentive, very sensitive, and your mindfulness is just aware. It don't think. Understand? The moment you think, what happened? Like this morning, I tell you. Because you have a physical body, you have a mind. Okay? The Buddha called us a human being because there are two aspects. The first aspect is, as a human being, we have a physical body. So this is our form, physical form, first aspect. Then we have a consciousness, a mind. This mind can do four things, the Buddha said. It can become aware. That is the first aspect of the true mind. But there is another aspect of mind, the Buddha said. The conditioned arising mind. Which he called the five. Sorry. Which they call it the five. Where are the pen? Oh, sorry. The five aggregate of form and mind. So when it comes to mind, there are two aspects. Thank you. Mind. There are two aspects. One is true mind. This true mind is only aware. Understand? Aware means what? It cannot think. It cannot come out and live. Understand? But it has this nature inside, just aware. The essence of mind, aware. And because it's aware, it can create the condition arising mind. Arising mind. this one is impermanent. This one has the characteristics where this is condition arising. So that's why, because we have a physical body. We have a physical body, we have a consciousness. So this is consciousness. This is the physical body. This is the first aspect of the form and mind, the five aggregate. First aspect. You no need to copy note. Huh? It's inside your one of your notes, dependent origination. Huh? But you have to listen, otherwise you cannot understand the note, because the note is quite summarized. Huh? But different part of the note, you will see the Dhamma inside there. So what happened is, this one is the physical form. Huh? So the Buddha called it the form, and this one he called it the mind. So this mind is a condition arising mind, because it is consciousness. So these two is the form and mind. And this mind, the Buddha said, is capable of four things, like I explained this morning. Huh? It has this ability to be perceive is one of them. The first one is to feel, Vedana. It can arise feeling, asana. Feeling is a aggregate of mind. This is your power of mind to feel hot or cold, asana. Whatever condition, like today's weather, you can feel them in there, karana. Then the feeling inside, emotion, good, peaceful feeling, agitated, fear, restlessness, all these are part of feeling. Huh? But here, the Buddha says, is pure feeling. Okay? Then the other thing that your mind can do is, it can perceive. In Pali, he calls sanya, perception. So perception is another quality of mind, power of mind. When you see something, you can perceive what you see. Right? When you hear something, you can perceive what you hear, like my voice. Yeah? The Buddha image, you can perceive. So what is perception? Perception is cognition. You recognize them. So sometimes the Mahayana put it as cognition. Understand? Nation. So whatever that you can perceive, you can know, understand? That's why the knowing part comes from the perception. And this is the one that brings the external form, external object into the mind, understand? That's how the second aspect of the five aggregate come to be. There is also a form in the mind. The third one is, your mind, whole day thing, so sankhara. Sankhara is everything that your mind can do. That's why in English they have a lot of terms. Some they call it activity of mind. Activity of mind. So this activity include thinking, planning, scheming, your deceitfulness, and also include all the mental states. The mental state, like your sadness, your sorrow, your lamentation, your joy, your happiness, your peacefulness. All these are your emotion, mental state. Then it includes your mental intention. Then your mental formation, because you can see light, you can see picture and all those things. So the sankhara can create all this. So these are what your mind is capable of. Anything that your mind can do, including feeling and perception. So that's why the Buddha always used this term. He only used sabbe sankhara. He never says sabbe vedana sanya sankhara. His sankhara cover them all. That's why the three universal characters, he always says sabbe sankhara anicchang. All of sankhara. Whatever your mind arises, your thought, your activity of mind, your emotion, your mental state, whatever that your mind can do, they come and they go, they are impermanent. If you give meaning, you hold, you cling, you get into trouble. Understand? Huh? You become afflicted. Suffering will be the result. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, then the last thing that your mind can do is what? It can become conscious of things, isn't it? Like you got your ear, you can be conscious of hearing. You got your eye, you can be conscious of what you see. So ability to become conscious as a human being, you are a conscious being. But you are not living. Most of them are conscious and existing through life because you think a lot. You're never with your true mind. Understand? Your true mind cannot come out, cannot live, but can be aware. And it is only the true mind that can develop the wisdom through the direct see. That's why meditation becomes so difficult to understand. Understand? Because you always get trapped in this condition arising mind. Understand? The condition arising mind is your mundane mind. Understand? Mundane. Yeah. This one leads to supramundane. Understand? That's why later on you will understand when you start to meditate. And it's very different. So when you understand that there is this what they call vijnanam, or consciousness, because the mind can become conscious. So the Buddha said, these are the five aggregates of form and mind. Form and mind, okay? Nama rupa. So what is happening is, when you are aware, before the knowing, with pure awareness, your awareness is with your nature. This one can arise consciousness at any of your sense door, understand? Or? That's why this one is oneness, all-embracing. That's why when you are aware, any of the sense door trigger of consciousness, the awareness will know. Understand? Or? So when you are aware, you know where the mind moves. Understand? Or? But the moment you become conscious, what happens? You are only at that sense door. Understand? Or? Like you're conscious of what I say, hearing consciousness. What happens? Through this, go in, the brain interpret. Understand? Or? When you are conscious of this, you cannot be aware anymore. Correct? Where your mind, at any one split second or any time, can only do one thing at a time. That's why when it's preoccupied with your thinking, preoccupied with your consciousness, preoccupied with your emotional stirring, you are lost in thought. You cannot be aware anymore. Then when you are stirred by what you feel through your views and opinion, that's why you react to them. So this is the source of the arising of the mundane mind, the consciousness. And this one, like the Buddha said, they are impermanent. And you hold and grasp, give meaning, they have the power to torment you, cause you suffering. And because of that, they are not real. They are not you. They are empty. Your feeling come and go, you didn't die. Correct? Your perception come and go, you didn't die. So how can feeling be you? How can perception be you? Your thought come and go, you didn't die. How can they be you? Consciousness arise and pass away, you didn't die. So this aggregate, they are not you. That's why it's anatta, non-self. And because they are impermanent, they are condition arising, dependent on condition they arise. When condition cease to be, it cease to be. So it's just a phenomenon. No reality, empty. Not a permanent unchanging entity where you can hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. Because of that, all things can be mine. Not possible. That's why the Buddha clearly tell you, they are non-self, they are empty, anatta. So when you see this clearly, you will not be deluded by it. Then they will not have power to cause you to grasp and cling and give meaning. And you can use them to live life, but you will not be tricked by them, understand? Deceived by them. And this is meditation. You have to find out all this during the meditation, then it becomes very clear to you. So now you understand. The moment you don't arise these four, you are silent. Understand not? Silent means what? You are aware. You are with your true mind, true nature. And that is what meditation is all about. This is the direct seeing. Understand not? So when you walk, you just walk. Understand not? You walk until the awareness come, that mindfulness come. Then that is the time. Yeah? You will have a lot of understanding. Then you will see all this, how they are conditioned inside you. Yeah. Then how from the feeling you get deluded. You develop the wrong view. You grasp, you cling, you hold. That is what craving is all about. That's why upon contact, feeling arise. The Buddha said, dependent on you. When feeling arise, if there is no wisdom, it will condition craving. Craving will condition grasping. You not only crave one, but you become very, like, the desire becomes so strong, you wanted it so badly, you grasp at it. When grasping arises, what happens? You become so strong in your craving and your grasping, you become that thing. Understand? Take for example, yeah? You have lust, okay? At first, it's just a thought. Understand? Then from that thought, it conditions you to become lustful. Then you see some beautiful form. Yeah? If it's a lady, you see a handsome guy or what. Or if you're a man, you see a pretty girl or what. Then from that craving, yeah, the initial lust at the thought level, it want that thing, it desire that thing. Then it become grasping. Then what happened? You become so lustful, you go and act it out. You become that lust. Then you can do funny thing. That's how people end up raping people and other things. Then when you become that, you can see one, the becoming. Then birth. Birth means you born yourself into that rapist. Understand? Here birth is not human birth. Understand? It's the consciousness taking birth and become that thing. It's just like anger. Yeah. Whatever feeling. From there, you develop the craving, the desire, the covetousness. Then after that, you grasp. You become. Then you take birth. That's how your whole mess of suffering comes to be. So all this, you will come to understand later. Okay? So more important is now, you must understand this so that you know how to do your daily mindfulness. You only need to be silent. When this thing don't arise, you don't think, you are already aware. Understand? So don't try to be aware. This is key. Okay? So walking, you just walk in a very relaxed awareness manner. Just aware. No need to be aware of anything. Just body and mind as one. You just walk. After a while, when that mindfulness set in, you will know what that thing is. Yeah. Then that mindfulness or the awareness is aware of the whole bodily movement. Even the blinking of your eye, your turning, your stretching or whatever. Understand? Then every action, every movement, you become aware. Because during that time, you already so used to that training of anchoring your mind to your awareness. Just now in the bus, how many of you experience that awareness when you look out of the window without thought? What you see? What do you see? What do you see? So what happened to your mind? What happened to your mind? Not only peaceful. You see, if you are really aware, attentive, your mind is like with that whole scenery, understand? It's just aware because it's the whole awareness. Understand? But the moment you try to cognize one part of the scenery, what happened? That flow gone, understand? Then the thought arise, understand? Then you are preoccupied with that. It's because you start to perceive, understand? Then when you start to think, your whole awareness is gone. Understand? Understand? Then if another consciousness take over, hearing, let's say I make announcement, then you become conscious of what I speak again. Understand? And you try to process what you hear. Understand? Of course, with attentiveness, it's okay. At least that thing go in. Understand? But the moment you allow that thing to proliferate, or you develop the wrong view to react to what you see and what you hear, that is when the stirring come about. This one, sankhara, depending on your mind state, your wisdom, or your delusion. If you are deluded, feeling become craving, craving become grasping, grasping become becoming, then you take birth. That's how you get into trouble all the time. That's why your right view, your wisdom is very important. So when you develop mindfulness, it just silence your mind and aware. You can just walk slowly, relaxed manner, then allow your vision or your mind to be just aware, generally aware. Then that creative mind, that silent mind, the peaceful mind that is aware, can give rise to a lot of understanding and wisdom. And then you can contemplate. You can reflect on what the Buddha say. Yeah. You can reflect on what I say and what you have read from the notes or the books or the text. And all these things will develop the understanding behind what that Dhamma is. When you start to reflect, contemplate, inquire, means you allow your creative nature to make you understand. Yeah. So, second turning wisdom is about contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into the truth or the Dhamma that the Buddha has teached. So, this part will help you in your sitting, in your what they call walking meditation and contemplation. So now, because we don't have much time left, I got another 10 over minutes. What I will do is, maybe after this, I will let you meditate for a while. At least you settle down for a while. I will give you the instruction on how to meditate. For those who are new, maybe you need instruction. For those who already know how to do, you can start your formal meditation. If you want to sit, you sit. If you want to walk, you walk. There is space. Then if you want to, let's say, do your bowing, or you want to do your contemplation outside, you can do it. But outside, I need to take you around first. Maybe after the meditation, I will end, maybe look at the program. What time is supposed to end? Oh, 4:30. Maybe at 4:15 I will ring the bell. After I ring the bell, we all can pay respect. Then we will, what they call, go out, and I will take you around, show you the place where you can do your contemplation. Then after that, only we come back. We supposed to come back at 4:30. We see how it goes. Maybe we take another extra 10 minutes or what. Then we come back at 4:40 or what. Then we continue our Q&A and all those things. Because now I start early. Now it's only 3:20. Is the time correct? Is it 3:20 now? Oh, 3:16 only. That one is fast. Okay, I make a note. So good. So I start 15 minutes early, the formal meditation. So for those who know how to meditate, you can go ahead. For those who need instruction, you just listen. Then you try your best to follow this instruction. My instruction is very simple, like I explained just now. Because the five hindrances are so strong, you have to decondition this heedless thinking. So what I will do is, I will train your mind to do the mind sweeping method. Mind sweeping method means you close your eye, you relax your body and mind, then you silence your mind.
After you silence your mind, you just feel, maintain attention at your forehead. From your forehead, you feel if there's any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just relax them. Silently relax, relax, relax. Just feel the whole muscle within your forehead soothingly relax. Then after that, we sweep it down. Okay, scan off the lights. Yuchan, where is the light out over there? So for those who already know how to meditate, you start. For those who need instruction, you listen. Make sure your backbone is straight. Body and mind relax in harmony. Then you just silence your mind. Breathe in, breathe out normally. Then you close your eye. Then you maintain awareness or attention at your forehead. Feel your forehead. Feel. If there is any tension, tightness or stress within, you just silently relax every part of your forehead muscle. So what you do is you feel, you relax. You feel, you relax. You don't think. So feel, relax. Then you move your awareness or attention down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel the eye muscle soothingly relax. Every strand of it. Then you move your attention down to your facial muscle. Feel it. Relax every part within. To assist you further, try to radiate a radiant smile. Visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, there's a lot of joy. When there's a lot of joy, means you are very relaxed. That's why it will help you to relax. Then you start to radiate this loving kindness to yourself. You can recite, follow what I do. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the mind with a lot of happiness and well-being. Meditation will lead to inner peace and inner well-being. So when you radiate loving kindness, that metta will develop the wholesome state of mind to bring about a lot of calmness and well-being. So you feel your body and mind. When you recite, may this body and mind of mine, you feel your body and mind. Be well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your body and mind, your entire being. Feel it. This will bring a lot of well-being into your physical body and your mind. Then after that, you can also radiate kindness, goodness. May this body and mind of mine too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May it too be free from harm and danger. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May it too be free of all mental negativity, like fear, worry, anxiety, unhappiness. May it do keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be peace deep within my heart. Then you can visualize your loved one, somebody you have affinity with, who have close relationship with you. Then you read it the same from your heart. May my loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness and radiate it from your heart to them. You can visualize them smiling too. Excuse me. Then you can also wish them well-being and happiness. May they too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May they all too be without fear, worry and anxiety. May they all always be happy and peaceful. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be peace deep within their hearts. Then after that, you can relate to all your co-meditator and all beings within this vicinity. May all beings within this vicinity of Sambhasa, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all our Kayanamita and co-meditator, cultivator, may they all to be well, happy and peaceful always. May they all to be free from all danger, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind state to be free from all negative mental state. May they be peaceful and happy always. May there be no enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves peaceful and happy always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then may all beings within the vicinity of Brinchang, the entire Cameron Highland, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, our planet Earth, our solar system, our galaxy and the whole universe, may all beings within the entire existence too be well, happy and peaceful always. May they all to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be peace deep within their hearts. After this, you should be more calm and more peaceful. You come back to your facial muscle, you just feel it should be a lot more relaxed, peaceful and calm. Then you move your attention to your neck, shoulder, relax every part, hand, relax back to shoulder. Then you feel your heart, your chest area. Your heart and your chest area is very important. This is where your heartbeat is. This is where your life force is. This is where the seat of consciousness is. So you just silence your mind and feel, silence everything and feel. You can detect the heartbeat or any vibration. You just silence your mind and stay silent. Be with it without thought. You just anchor your awareness there. It will make you very peaceful, very calm, very relaxed. Then you just silence everything. But if you are new, your mindfulness is not able to detect all this, it's okay. You just relax. Feel your heart area, just relax every part of it. Then you move on to your stomach, feel, relax, don't think. You move it down to your abdomen, still do the same, feel, relax. Then your buttock and your leg, feel, relax, no more thinking. You can reverse the whole process from your leg, feel, relax, buttock, abdomen, feel, relax, stomach, heart, shoulder, hand, back to shoulder, neck, facial muscle, eye muscle, and forehead. If after one cycle, you are already more peaceful, more calm, and more mindful, then you can start to stabilize this mindfulness or this silent mind. You can use napanasati
or mindfulness of the in and out breath that the Buddha has recommended. Mindfulness of in and out breath, anapanasati, is very easy to do. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So you only need to be mindful of your breathing. Your breathing is always in the moment, so very easy. So like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. Maintain attention in front of your nostril, silent. Don't do anything, just feel. When you can detect your breathing, like the Buddha said, breathing in, you are aware, means mind and the breath as one, aware without thought. Breathing out, you are aware, mind and the breathing as one, without thought. You can use any technique or method. If you are used to rising, falling, you can use them, no problem. The only difference is you just silence your mind and just feel the abdomen. Don't go and look for anything. Just silence and let the awareness detect the rising and falling. Don't go and use your thought and try to note anything, because that one is not the true sati. That one is what your thought want to look for. Most of the time it's still sankhara inside there. You still got concept and verbalization. But when you silence your mind and don't try to know, just allow it to detect, then all of a sudden, when you are mindful, you will detect that rising and falling got no words. Your sati will understand what that thing is. So if you want to do, you do it that way. Otherwise, you try anapanasati. The method is not important. The key is to develop a stable mindfulness. So any object of meditation that can make your mind stay there and become mindful and stable, use it. So anapanasati is the same. Initially, you are not used to it. This mind wanders off very fast. You can hardly be mindful of your breathing. Within split second, it wanders off. But you don't worry. When this mind wanders off, you just patiently bring it back to be aware of the breathing. Initially, it's like quite difficult, but no. It's easier than learning how to ride a bicycle, really. It's very easy. You only need to be patient. Every time it wanders off, you just patiently bring it back. After a while, the mind will get used to it. If you don't react, don't develop the dislike and the fear, the mind will settle down. Then when it settles down, you will like to develop this anapanasati, because it will make you so calm and so peaceful. So when you are able to be aware of this breathing without thought, you develop what they call sati, or mindfulness of this in and out breath. So anapanasati can make you very peaceful and very calm. Then your mind will enter what they call pasati. Pasati is the tranquility or stillness of mind, but that will only come later. Initially, it's like you become so mindful and so peaceful. It's like your breathing and your mind, they are in harmony, synchronized. Then no thought. When there is no thought, your breathing become very peaceful and very calm. Piti can arise. Piti is a type of mental rapture or mental peace or calmness. So piti, when it arises, it is a very good mental state. You will like to meditate, because it's a spiritual calmness that brings about spiritual joy or rapture inside you, born of that calmness. So you continue to be mindful. It will intensify. Then if you don't do anything, you just allow it, it will become more and more what they call calm and peaceful. Finally, it becomes sukha. Sukha is what they call spiritual bliss. Your mind becomes so blissful. Then you like to meditate. So pity and sukha, let it arise. Then after a while, you continue to be relaxed and silent and mindful. This breathing, from long breathing, long and heavy breathing, will become short and subtle breathing. Then later, it's like there is no more thought, no more thinking, no more movement, like there is no more breathing, very subtle breathing. During that time, you just silence your mind completely. That is the time when your mind is going to enter Pasati. It has to develop the higher and more refined sati to cope with that meditation. When you silence your mind at that time, there is like no more breathing. But if you continue to be patient and continue to silence, after a while you will be very surprised. You can detect the subtle breathing, like your mindfulness come back to you, but at a more refined level. Then through that sati, you will be able to become very quiet, very peaceful and very silent. Then you can be aware of any part within your body. Wherever you put that mind, it will detect any subtle breathing, movement or activity, even the heartbeat. That's why you don't need a stethoscope. Then wherever you locate this mind has awareness. It's already in sati. That's why the mind that has pasati is very, very beautiful. This is the silent mind that I'm talking about. When it's silent, it's still. That's why it's called tranquility, stillness. Silent, still, peaceful, aware. So, pasati is what you need to develop. Then when you can do that, all of your subtle movement, whichever part of your body, kaya, will be like magnified. Like you can understand what is inside the whole activity or phenomena. And then the characteristic will start to arise. Then you can feel, you can be aware of all the tactile consciousness, all the sense of consciousness that arise and pass away. Then this mind can develop wisdom. That's why when there is pasati, the mind is already trained, stable, silent. And this is the silent mind that can be aware, that can be mindful, that can develop understanding and wisdom, that can give rise to direct seeing. So when you have a stable mindfulness developed, when that pasati is very strong, the silent mind is very strong and stable, you can use it to do walking meditation. You can use it to cultivate daily mindfulness. It will be very easy. Then after that, this mind is like already in sati. So because the mind is already in sati, every moment of consciousness, there will be mindfulness, even at the hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or seeing, or thought. And this is the mind that the Buddha talked about. Sati, mindfulness. And as it stabilizes, sati becomes samadhi. With sati and samadhi, you can see things as they are. Wisdom will arise. Insight can arise. So with this, I will let you continue your meditation. Then if you already have enough, you want to change, you can do your walking. Or you can do your bowing. And later on, maybe you can learn how to develop the Dhamma contemplation. Dhamma contemplation, when we take a walk around, I will brief you a little bit more. But the Dhamma notes has all the things there. So you learn how to develop them by going through them. For those who attend the briefing, and also prepare themselves, you will know what to do.
you need to refer to the notes, you can read up a bit, then you go and do your Dhamma contemplation. Okay, now I will let you develop your meditation, then I will ring the bell, maybe in about half an hour's time, 3:10.
for those who still want to meditate, you can continue to meditate. For those who have not, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Okay. What I will do is maybe we go and do the walk later. We follow with the Q&A because it's supposed to together. After meditation, you're supposed to do your Q&A. Formal meditation, 3:30 to 4:30. We are sitting and walking or lying down, plus daily mindfulness training. We are bowing, Dhamma contemplation, reflection and inquiry within the vicinity of the temple area. So while in the walking, standing, sitting and lying down posture. So what we can do is we try to finish out the next part, the 4:30 to 5:30 one. I have saved some time for you. Now it's only 4:10. So the Q&A will be question and answer, followed by the review of the daily mindfulness and Dhamma note that Brother Teo has given out earlier on. To develop the proper understanding of Dhamma and meditation as taught by the Buddha, then you can ask me any question you like regarding the meditation, the Dhamma, and also real life application of the Dhamma. So all your questions related to meditation, the teaching, and how to apply what you have learned, you can ask. So make use of this Q&A session to ask me questions. Then I can also at the same time help reply and let you understand better. Then after that, I will spend some time going through the Dhamma notes that you need to. Maybe for the benefit of Mr. and Mrs. Kang who just came, they didn't attend our briefing. So you turn to first page. I will combine this. First page, you have what they call the main purpose. We should let them understand too, because this I have explained to those who came for the pre-retreat and those who attended my class. These are very important. Cameron Highland Meditation Retreat on the 1st, which is today of May 2013 to the 4th of May, conducted by me, Brother Teo. Okay, the main purpose of this retreat, there are four. I expanded it a bit. The previous 2011 retreat, I only know two of them. So this one is important. I add in the first two. The first one is to realize the noble teaching of the Buddha. We are sincerely cultivating the much-needed heedfulness as advised by the Buddha under his Dhammapada verse 21, 22 and 23. These are the famous verse on heedfulness which the Buddha has always what they call reminded the monks and even the lay people. To the Buddha, the most important quality of mind is heedfulness. Without heedfulness, the Buddha say, you are as if dead. So heedfulness is very important. So we need to understand what is heedfulness. If you look at the notes, there are many areas which, like what I have explained, it already explained to you the full detail of heedfulness. Then just to summarize, heedfulness got two parts. The Buddha say heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. This is a very important statement, very powerful statement. If you are not heedful, as far as the Buddha is concerned, spiritually you are as if dead, means you don't have spiritual life. There is no potential for you to gain enlightenment. So you may be alive, living, conscious of life, but you never live because there is no spiritual understanding, there is no spiritual life. So without a spiritual understanding, you physically may be living, but spiritually you don't have a life. You don't have the spiritual life, the spiritual understanding. You cannot become an enlightened being. You cannot live the spiritual life of a noble one. Yeah? So that is a very dangerous situation. And so human beings suffer because they lack the wisdom, the Dhamma, born of spiritual understanding, born of the noble truth that the Buddha has taught. This noble truth or noble teachings of the Buddha, I need to explain a little bit for those who are new. You see, the Buddha like to use this word noble, Arya. In the ancient day, during the Buddha's time, an Arya is a noble one or an enlightened one. Mm. That's why they call noble truth Arya Satcha. Yeah. The Aryas are noble one or enlightened one. So Aryas, they have these noble qualities. That's why they are called Aryas, the noble one or enlightened one. They are very noble in their understanding of the law that governs life and existence. Means they are very noble in their understanding of life. Mm. They have noble understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the three spiritual law: law of karma, law of the mind, and Dhamma Niyama, or law of truth or Dhamma. Mm. So these three law, in Pali the Buddha called karma niyamas, citta niyamas, and Dhamma niyamas. You understand these three spiritual law, you will know how to live life, because these are the most powerful law that governs all of the spiritual life of living beings. There are another two law. He called Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. Uttu is the physical law, nature's physical order. Bija Niyama is nature's biological order. The scientists are very good in these two laws. These are scientific law. So physical law has to do with physics and chemistry. That's why they progress very fast. Biological law has a lot to do with biology, organic things, plants, animals, fishes, whatever that is organic and have life. It may be a living thing. So all of the organic or biological order follow this law. So when the scientists are very good in this, they have a lot of breakthrough. That's why our civilization advanced so fast in the last 20 to 30 years. Similarly, if you have this breakthrough for this spiritual law, you understand the law of karma, you understand how your mind functions and works, and you understand the teaching of the Buddha, the Dhamma, Niyamas, you become like a very powerful scientist, but in the spiritual field. That's why you become very different. So this right view is very important. So the noble one or the enlightened one, they have this. Then to live life, the Buddha said, you must have right speech, right action, and right thought. Means this noble one, they are very noble in the way they communicate with you, their speeches and their right communication skill. They are very skillful and noble in the way they express themselves, in the way they act, and in the way they arise their thought and live their life. Then they are very skillful in the training of their mind. They have this ability to connect to the true mind. they are constantly aware and mindful. That's why they have right mindfulness leading to the right samadhi, or what they call collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. Then the last one is they have this noble quality of an enlightened being, which is they are incapable of negativity because of their wisdom. So they will have completed the training of the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why they can become enlightened. So noble truth are special truth. So now I come to this understanding. The Buddha called noble truth means these are the truth that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones the moment you understand them. That's why the teachings of the Buddha, he called it the Four Noble Truths. This is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. When you understand this Four Noble Truths, it's like you understand the secret of life. You know how to live. These Four Noble Truths are very unique. You see, the Buddha is such a great being. He is fully enlightened, perfect in wisdom and virtue. At the time when he arrives, you can say he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. Not only human being, even among the devas, nobody can compare. He not only enlightened, he has fully perfected his enlightenment. So because of that, the Buddha is very unique. He has this special wisdom. He is able to summarize all of his great understanding into just four simple truths, which he called the Noble Truth, the Four Noble Truths. And within this Four Noble Truths, all of life, mundane and the supramundane, they are all summarized there. So that is why he is so great. So when we talk about Noble Truth, you look at the first purpose. Noble teaching of the Buddha, we have to realize this noble teaching, which is the noble truth. We are sincerely cultivating the much needed heedfulness of Appamada. As advised by the Buddha via his Dhammapada verse. So this heedfulness is very important. So without heedfulness, you cannot understand his teaching, you cannot cultivate his teaching, you cannot investigate into his teaching. So heedfulness is most important. So for those who already read through, you will know what they are. But for those who are still not so sure, I will explain one more time. Heedfulness got two parts, like the Buddha said. To be heedful, you must first be mindful, always remember. So heedfulness is mindfulness first. Means you have to train your mind to be very mindful. And this mindfulness must be stabilized. When this mindfulness is stabilized, means you have the silent mind cultivated. Anytime, if you want it to be aware, it's just aware. You want it to be peaceful, it is just peaceful. You want it to arise, the thought, perceive, think, or what, it is under your command. Means this mind is already trained, aware, silent within. So that first training is what meditation is all about. That's why you train your mind to be mindful, to be aware. But the training is not using your thought, understand? The training is using your wisdom and understanding, following what the Buddha has taught. So like I said earlier on, it appears like contradictory. No need to be try to be aware. You must know why are you not mindful. Why are you not able to be aware? It's because of the heedless thinking that the Buddha talked about. You look at the whiteboard on top. The blue color is five mental hindrances. You can see them or not? You can see them, huh?
Sensual desire, ill will are the first two. Sensual desire are positive craving, your like, your pleasurable sense experience. Ill will are your dislike and unpleasant sense experience. So these two, throughout the day, you experience them. It oscillates. Every moment of consciousness, when you perceive something, even your taste, your smell, when you smell something not nice, like pungent or terrible smell, you react to it, isn't it? You feel the aversion inside, isn't it? This is what prevents you from becoming peaceful and mindful. Then when you experience something very nice, very fragrant, you get attracted. Sadhu, thank you. There is this craving within you. So positive and negative, they call it your like and dislike, pleasant and pleasant, unpleasant experience, your duality throughout the day. That's why you have a lot of right and wrong, good and bad. You want to argue with people, understand? You want to develop the conflict and all those things. Through what? Wanting to be right. Don't want to be blamed. And all this lead to what they call misunderstanding, conflict, argument, especially with your friends, your loved one, your spouse, your colleague, and even your own children. And it's because of this hindrance. So when you have a lot of hindrance throughout the day, your mind is never peaceful. That's why it's called a mental hindrance. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. The third one is sleepiness, or lethargic mind. For those who can't see, maybe I turn it a bit. Okay. You see, when you don't see the importance of training your mind to be heedful, you become what? Heedless, isn't it? A heedless person is a person who couldn't care about life, because he's so heedless, he don't care. And such a person is very selfish. They just do what they like. If they don't feel good, they get angry. They just become violent. That's why they become evil people, root of all evil. So heedlessness is very dangerous. But when you see the importance of meditation, when you see the danger of heedlessness, then you become heedful. And when you become heedful means what? You are very mindful of what is going on. You don't want to become heedless and get yourself entangled, get into trouble. That's why you will never be sleepy. You will be determined, full of this determination, or what they call full of energy and effort to develop this cultivation or this meditation. So this will drive you. This will become virya, the spiritual faculty. Okay? So when you don't have this faith and virya or spiritual zeal or tenacity, without these two spiritual faculty, you will become sleepy. You don't have the what they call seriousness to go this way. Then the fourth hindrance is restlessness of mind. Your mind become like agitated, restless, a lot of fear, worry, anxiety. Why? Because you don't understand what is going on. You don't have right view. You don't have the Dhamma. Because of that, you perceive a lot of things with uncertainty, and you think it's a problem. So when you worry about this thing, when you have fear, worry, and anxiety over what will happen or what has happened, the past and the future, you have a lot of problems. Then this fear, worry, anxiety will make you restless, lack of peace, unhappy, miserable. So this is a very real mind state.
human being who has a lot of problem and issue face a lot of restlessness, hindrance. They worry about their health, their relationship with their loved one. They scared people don't love them anymore, want to separate from them. They worry about their career, their job, their business. They worry about their financial standing. They worry about their wealth, their property, their security, their safety. Yeah. There are so many things that can make them worry. Yeah. Sometimes they worry about their property, yeah, whether affected or not. Yeah. Then sometimes because of the way society is, they worry about their children joining the bad people, the wrong people. They also worry about their children's future, their education, their career, their marriage, their future. Then some, they worry about how they can live their life with people whom they don't like their in-law. Then sometimes when relationship fail, you have a lot of problem. So society actually is not easy for living beings to develop the understanding to live life. So because of that, this hindrance is very strong. Then the last one is doubt. Hindrance is doubt. When you lack faith and confidence in yourself, you become doubtful, you're not sure. Then when you lack understanding of what are the laws that governs life and existence, you cannot understand why you are like that. That's why they always blame. Why is God so unfair? Why is my life like that? How come I am so unlucky? When you understand the teaching, the Dhamma, there is no such thing. Nobody make you miserable. Nobody make you unlucky. Everything follow this nature's law. Like the Buddha said, you are born of your karma, head to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what your karma condition you into. You are what you are because of karma. So when you understand this nature's law, moral causation, cause and effect, you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. Then you understand. People who has been very generous, that's why when they come, they reap what they sow. Whatever they give, come back to them. That's why they have the wealth. People who have been kind to people, when they come again, they will have this kindness given back to them. But if you have been a heedless living being before, do all the evil thing, heedlessly live your life, you cause so much suffering to fellow living being. This life you come when there is condition, these people will do back to you. Or condition will arise for you to receive what you did to people. You reap what you sow. You cannot blame anybody for what happened. Then you will come to realize the nature's law is like that. It is very fair. That's why you cannot blame anybody. You look around. There is nothing magical or created. Last time, ancient people don't understand. When there is a thunder, they say God is angry. But now you know there is no such thing. Understand? Then when there is certain happening, because they lack understanding, they attribute to what they believe in. But actually you look back, everything follows a set of nature's law. Like I look back into my life, how I came to this world, how this form and mind came to this world. I cannot deny I was born through my mother's womb. But then when I heard about certain type of religion telling me about God creation, at first I tried to understand why they are so strong on this. But when they start to tell me all those things, it's because their religion have that belief. So I say, it's okay. What I want to know is, what is your so-called God? Because they say almighty, understand? Almighty means what? It can do what it want to do. Correct not? So that time I was quite young. So I got a question. I said, if God create, then who created God? That religion, there are two of this religion. They tell me, God is almighty. You cannot ask this question. So I say, I'm a science student. When I study science, I was told nothing is created or destroyed. There's a law of conservation of mass and energy. So I say, if you talk about creation, then there must be a creator who create that creator. Otherwise, how? So they cannot answer. They just say, almighty beyond question. Okay, I leave it at that. Then I got a second question. I said, if God is almighty, if I'm given the power, I can create a better world. I can create utopia. Correct not? There is no problem in this world. But how come I see in this world so much misery, so much war, so much conflict, so many people born like that? Oh, they say, this is God's way of testing. But you say He is all-loving, all-compassionate. So that's why when all this starts to, like, give me the condition to probe further, actually I went and seek all other religion. I never look at Buddhism, you know. You know why? You know what? When I saw what my mother did, the Chinese traditional practice, they go to see deity, ask the medium, then they ask for favor. If the favor granted, my mother will offer slaughter chicken. I look at that, I say, if this is Buddhism, forget about it. That's why I never look at the Buddhist teaching. For the first 1 or 2 years when I search for truth, my mind is very different because I am very scientific, very rational. So I want to know the truth. So when I was young, form 4, form 5, I like to look at the sky. I like to probe nature. I like to understand who am I, what am I, why am I here. So that led me to all this. So finally, I just tell them, sorry, I cannot believe something that I don't understand. I will continue to search. Then what conclusion I came to was, maybe I cannot understand now. But I, very funny, inside my heart tell me, one day I will understand, but only through meditation. And that time I don't know what is meditation. Then I was very lucky. End of Form 5, after the exam, my classmate, he got a sister, also Theo. He gave me one book, What Buddhist Belief, written by Chief Revan, the first edition. The moment I opened that book, I was full of joy because I saw Chief Revan explain all the things that my mother do, nothing to do with the teaching. That is not Buddhism. That is Taoism, traditional practice. Then I read further. Then I saw this Four Noble Truths. The moment I read that Four Noble Truths, very funny, you know. Like I understood what is truth. I heard it before. And then I realized, whoever 2,000 over years ago can summarize all of life so beautifully into this Four Noble Truths, he must be the real one. Because even if I have this ability to become enlightened, I cannot summarize all of my understanding into just Four Noble Truths. And that was the moment. Immediately from that moment, I got no more doubt. I no need to search. I said, this is the teaching. That's why after that, I was so lucky. After Form 6, I got into University of Malaya. I did engineering with Sui An and Mi Fong Diao, same class. The first day I came to the university, another uni mate, Tranganawa Sovi Chong, he took me to attend one lecture, not a lecture, sorry, a talk, actually spoken by this Chief Reverend K. Sri Damananda. I was full of joy. I never see a monk before shaved with the robe. Immediately after that talk, it was so scientific. I went and asked for the address. That's how I started Brickfield. And that's how my journey until today. And I was very grateful for Chief Reverend too. He's very patient. I listened to a lot of his talk. The initial basic Dharma, I learned from him and Reverend Suwano. But they cannot explain to me the deep teaching. The deep teaching later on, it came from those who I have affinity with, 1986 to 89. Yeah. Actually, until 92. But by 89, I already understood what this is. So after I understood, I realized the Buddha Dharma was so beautiful. But living beings cannot understand. So it's so difficult to share with them. Yeah. So that's why when I started the understanding, all this was not taught the way it's supposed to be taught. The five hindrances and the five spiritual faculties, these two, the way it's taught is different. That's why it's not penetrated, especially the five hindrances. Very few people understand how it actually become a hindrance and how it affects living beings. And how through this you develop habitual tendency and your lack of ability to meditate. Yeah. Then what is meditation and all those things. So because of that, when you understand, the Buddha's teaching becomes so clear, so beautiful. So this aspect is very important. Yeah. The spiritual faculty that the Buddha talked about, he said, without these five, you cannot overcome the five hindrances. So you need to cultivate this five spiritual faculty. And the Buddha's way is so simple. He said, you have to develop your faith or your saddha, confident in the Buddha and his teaching. You have to develop the spiritual zeal or virya. Means you must have this tenacity to cultivate the understanding that this is important and the spiritual zeal to go all out. So when you have the faith and the virya, mindfulness will be cultivated automatically. You will become heedful. You dare not be heedless anymore. So that's why this sati become very easy. When you seriously cultivate it, when you are serious, sincere and determined, sati will come. That's why this retreat will develop the stability in sati. So it's only when you cultivate this mindfulness or silent mind, then only you can have the possibility to be heedful, to understand life, to understand the teaching, to understand the nature's law that governs life, right? Then you know how to live. Yeah. So I come back to mindfulness. This one is to train your mind to be silent, to be aware, so that it's very stable. When mindfulness is stable, use it to cultivate the Buddha Dharma or the Noble Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths. Then you become heedful. Appamada is heedfulness. Heedfulness is the combination of mindfulness to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So now you understand the purpose. Eh? Heedfulness. To develop, you must develop mindfulness. And mindfulness need to be understood. You must do with understanding. Otherwise, you cannot get it right. Mm. So mindfulness is just the silent mind in awareness before the knowing, before the thought. Understand? So the moment your thought is active, the moment this aggregate of mind is active, you are no longer mindful. You are no longer aware. So the key to mindfulness is just don't do anything. Learn to silence your mind. Learn to decondition your heedless thinking. That's why just now in the meditation, I teach you the first technique is the mind sweeping method. So here you just feel, relax, no thinking. Then you sweep down, feel, relax, feel. As you do more and more, the thinking becomes less and less, less and less. Because thinking is a habitual tendency. When it becomes habitual, you keep on repeating, repeating, repeating until that momentum is so strong. You know what is momentum or not? Like this one, if I swing, I give it the energy to move.
And this momentum is sustained because I continue to move it as well. It's just like your heedless thinking. If you continue to be heedless, that momentum will go on. That's why dependent origination, you cannot stop. And the only way to stop this momentum is to have mindfulness. What is mindfulness? Mindfulness is awareness. The moment you are aware, you are silent. There is no thought. Understand? No thought means what? Like this one, if I don't give it any more energy, yeah, it will oscillate, then it will become stationary. Correct? Not? Then to move this, I need a lot of strength. Understand? But if I already moving like that, I don't need much strength. Either. The momentum will take it through. Either. Correct? Not? So this is what is happening to you. When you are not trained, you think a lot, you have a lot of hindrance. So throughout the day, all the heedless thinking, like, your habit already. That's why you cannot stop, you cannot reverse. The only way to reverse is to have more and more moment of mindfulness. But this moment of mindfulness must be done with understanding. It's not to go and note. When you note, it's not mindfulness. It's introducing another thought to replace the heedless thinking. So when you are aware, there is no more thought. No more thought means what? No more dependent origination. But as long as there is ignorant, dependent origination will start again. As long as there is hindrance, the five hindrance, your mind will become heedless again. So cultivation means what? Cultivation means to develop the spiritual faculty until they are very strong, very stable. That's why you all heard about balas, isn't it? You heard of balas? The five spiritual power. When the spiritual faculty become powers, they call it balas. The Pali word is B-A-L-A. Balas means the same five spiritual faculty, when they become unshakable, understand? Very stable. When your faith in the Buddha become unshakable and his teaching become unshakable, then your faith has become balas, power. This is what it means. When your virya becomes so strong, unshakable, continuously you will do, then when your mindfulness becomes so stable, you are throughout the day mindful. You can never lapse back into heedlessness. Then your samadhi too, and your wisdom, when they become power, they become unshakable. And they will prevent the five hindrances from arising. And this spiritual faculty, you need them even to live your life. Even not for spiritual thing. If you want to be successful in life, you ask yourself, first, you need to be confident in it. Confident in yourself. In it. When you have confidence and faith in yourself, half the battle is won. Right now. When you are not confident, like going for exam, chances if you will fail, even attending interview, understand? So confidence is number one. But you must have confidence in something that will make you strong. Sometimes self-confidence already helps so much. But if you can have self-confidence and confidence in somebody who is so special like the Buddha, the fully enlightened one, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue, this type of confidence will make you very different. Then mindfulness is what the true mind is all about. If you cannot come back and connect to your true mind, you cannot understand who you are and what you are. Then you constantly live in the mundane world, trapped in the five aggregate of form and mind, thinking that this human being is you, thinking that this form and mind is you. That's why the Buddha called it delusion, sakayaditi, self-delusion, clinging and grasping to the wrong thing. And this is the cause of your suffering. When you deludedly believe this fire aggregate of form and mind is what you are, suffering is the result. And that is the final summary of his first number 12. So now you come to understand. The five spiritual faculty are very,
very important. In order to overcome the five hindrances, and this five spiritual faculty, the Buddha said, very easy to cultivate. When you do your puja, when you reflect upon His great quality and His teaching, like we chant this morning, salutation to the Buddha Dharma and the Sangha, the Triple Gem, your faith become very strong because you know this Triple Gem is fantastic. They are the one that has the teaching and can make you enlightened, can make a big difference to your life. Then the moment you have faith, it will drive you to have virya, asana, spiritual zeal or tenacity. Then when the virya is there, it will automatically make you heedful, want to meditate, want to train your mind to be mindful. So to train your mind to be mindful is very easy. When you understand what is mindfulness, actually there is no need to do anything, asana. You don't have to practice mindfulness. Mindfulness is already there if you don't think, if you are not heedless. So to be mindful is to develop the spiritual faculty strong. When you are mindful, there is no more thinking, no more heedlessness. That's why mindfulness or awareness is very important. Learn to be silent, learn to be peaceful, learn to be aware, and then automatically your hindrance of mind will disappear. After sati or mindfulness is stable, if you continue with the meditation, samadhi will be the result. Because the continuous mindfulness will make your sati or your mind very stable, unwavering. But before wisdom comes, samadhi, born of sati, can still have problems. Asana, because there is no wisdom, equanimity not there. So certain things can still make you sad, unhappy and miserable. Then after your sati and samadhi is there, your mind is so different because you are mindful and collected. Collected means what? Collectedness of mind, unwavering mind, means at the moment of sense experience, after you have samadhi, when you see things, hear things, smell, taste, tactile, feel things, your mind is not affected. Anasana. Not affected means what? It does not waver. It does not stir. It does not get conditioned into like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. That's why the hindrance cannot arise. Anasana. So when there is sati and samadhi, the mind does not waver. You will see things as they are, the direct seeing. Without the conditioning of your views and your opinion, without your thought to cloud you, to distract you, to make you deluded, etc. So because of that, sati and samadhi can lead to wisdom. It can see things as they are and awaken to the truth, the characteristics of nature. That's how wisdom, born of right understanding, come to be. And wisdom is not a knowledge, it's not rigid. Okay? So this whole picture will let you understand the beauty of the Buddha's teaching. Yeah? So now I come back to the main purpose so that we can finish off, then we can go for our walk. Okay. Now you will understand all these four purposes. The second one is to train ourselves during the meditation retreat to develop a very stable daily mindfulness. You note the one in bracket. Mindfulness means what? Silent mind with inner awareness. Silent, like I said, not only verbally silent, even your mental chattering also no more. Understand? Means mentally also silent. Understand? And that is the real sati, when you are not chattering inside. Silent mind with inner awareness, leading to the heedfulness from the moment we commence our trip, which we did this morning. Then to diligently, really diligently, maintain noble silence of mind and speech during the retreat duration. As a sign of sincerity of purpose, means you really want to train your mind to develop this understanding. Then the third one is the respect for this place, because this is a very good temple, very conducive for meditation. Apart from the gong you heard. So meditation, like I said, not to attach to quietness, not to attach to peace, not to attach to good meditation, understand? What is the purpose of meditation? To develop the wisdom to become enlightened or liberated. That is in number four. So meditation is not to develop the good state of mind so that you attach to them, understand? Then this is not the place for you to come for meditation, understand? Because if you don't understand meditation correctly, you cannot cultivate it, you cannot develop it. So meditation is about wisdom, it's about cultivating the direct seeing leading to the awakening. It's not a knowledge, it is a understanding born of wisdom, enlightenment. So when you have that understanding, means what? Whether there is gong, whether there is snoring at the back or what, it is a condition to test you, understand? To make you understand how your mind can still stir and react. Because if you attach to good state of meditation, or you attach to a quiet and peaceful meditation, then suddenly there is noise, there is vibration, there is snoring. What happens? You become affected. And your view, which is so conditioned, will straight away react. How come these people so insensitive? Come for retreat, snore here, make so much noise. Temple, how come they gong it so loud? It is nothing to do with the outside, understand? It is everything to do with your inside, understand? If your mind is not peaceful, don't blame the outside world for its lack of peace, understand? Yeah, the world is the world. People are the way they are, understand? If you have inner peace, if you have wisdom, nobody can make you lack of peace and miserable, understand? So meditation is to have this wisdom, the inner understanding, the awareness. That's why we see from here, how come outside affect inside? Understand? Because inside is not stable, understand? That's why it can be affected. But once inside has been developed with that understanding and stability, then it cannot be affected anymore. So this is a very important understanding. You come here to meditate, to develop wisdom, so that you can be at peace with yourself under any circumstances, anywhere, any place, any time, any situation. Understand? Then you become beautiful. Understand? Otherwise, after retreat, you go home, you scold your children. Mommy, you want to meditate, you come and disturb. Understand? You get angry because you are going to a good meditation and suddenly your daughter come to the door, bang, 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 mommy, mommy, mommy. Wow. You sure come out and scold. Then that is not meditation. When you meditation and can still get angry, what type of meditation is that? Make you more sensitive. Understand? Means you come here actually to enjoy the peace and come and to attach. And then you go back. That's why a lot of people find it so difficult to blend themselves back into society and leave after retreat and meditation. Because they come here for meditation without understanding what is purpose of meditation. Yeah? So we go on, then you will understand. The third one is learn to be at ease and naturally relax. So I emphasize many times already, you must be natural at ease. Otherwise, you are not relaxed. You are not at ease. When you are trying to act out of it, you are not natural, understand? Means you are not sincere, understand? When you try to become somebody, understand? When you try to become like, outwardly try to be generous, try to be loving, but inwardly, you know yourself. Nobody else knows. And that is acting out of it. But when you are natural and sincere, this is what life is all about. Understand? When you are natural and sincere, then you move and act with a lot of understanding. Because you are very sincere. You are incapable of negativity. You don't do one thing outwardly and inwardly think another thing. Understand? Because you are being sincere. Means you love, means you love. You care, means you care. You express it, people will feel you. But you act out of it, it's very unnatural. And people can feel you. They know this one not sincere, not true one. So meditation is the same. You try to be mindful means you are acting to be mindful. Means you don't understand what is mindfulness. So mindfulness, no need to try. When you understand means what? No thought, I'm already mindful. When I'm naturally at ease and relaxed, I'm already mindful. Understand? Naturally at ease and relaxed means what? No worry, no anxiety, no reaction. Understand? But you are at ease. Understand? You are natural. You are relaxed. Understand? When you are stressed up and unhappy or fearful or restless, then you are not relaxed. Correct? Not? When you have this anger or aversion or craving, you are not relaxed. You are excited or you are fearful, unhappy. So learn to be at ease, learn to be natural, and learn to relax more and more. And key thing is aware. We are heedfulness most of the time. Always move, speak, and act naturally but with inner awareness throughout the day. Move, speak, and act mindfully. Means what? All of your movement, action, speech, and thought process, you must be mindful. Must be aware. Aware of the mental intention behind. Aware of all the movement and action. When you anchor your mind to this, you cannot think. That's why when you are mindful, you don't think. You think very little. Little or no thinking. That's why you become heedful. More and more aware. More and more heedful. More and more silent. Only people who have a lot of hindrance, they think a lot. And they don't know how to live. The last one is, with the stable daily mindfulness or awareness, use it to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Now this is heedfulness. When you combine the two. When you combine the stable mindfulness that you have developed through the training, the meditation, and use it to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, leading to the heedfulness or Appamattha training throughout the day to realize the insight knowledges and wisdom needed to liberate the mind. So the key word is wisdom needed to liberate the mind as taught by the Buddha. And this is what meditation purpose is all about. So with this, I think we will end. 5 o'clock, I got half an hour to take you all around. Then after that, we will go for our dinner. Then you want to have a quick bath or what, you can have. It's up to you. Because after that, you have some time. Some break. Unless you spend too much time washing your plate. You try to do it more, what they call, faster. And maybe we have to split it up a bit. You need to talk something? Okay. After this, Joy, you got 2 announcements. So after you have your meal, 5:30 to 6,